regard to this application tonight, I was wondering if the health department is aware of the PFAS situation in town, and hopefully, I guess they're the folks that would be contacting homeowners or doing what the health department has to do.
Yeah.
So that's the first question. Do you know if that's the case?
I know they're aware of it. I don't know firsthand what they've done with respect to it.
Are you talking about education for residents about?
Yeah.
Education for residents about PFAS and what they can do on their own.
And the fact that there is the presence of PFAS in certain wells in town. So I'm just concerned about the folks who have wells that may not be aware and might want to do something to test the well.
The question, I guess, could also be, with that education, are we asking the township then to help residents with that issue, or?
Yeah, I think that seems to fall within the purview, in my mind, of the health department. And it's a health-related issue, and I would think they'd be interested in getting that.
I wonder how much it costs to test. I don't know.
Yeah, that's.
Oh, we could find out.
Yeah.
That there's no harm in looking into that.
Yeah, it would be good for people to know how much it costs to test for PFAS. And we should also have something, I think, to give them in terms of the relative danger or lack of danger of the levels we're talking about, because when you're talking about parts per trillion, that's really small. I mean, I don't want people to get all, you know, upset about something like this that they couldn't even detect 10 years ago. But another question I had along those lines is, those wells that they're talking about, 750 gallons a minute, 250 gallons a minute, that's way above average for wells in town. And it reminds me that there was a USGS report in the 60s on groundwater resources in Mercer County that suggested that here in Lawrence we have a series of faults that run through the town. And I'm suspecting that these wells are located on those faults, which is why they're getting so much water, but I don't think we know where the faults really run. And I suspect that anyone else who's located their well on one of these faults may have similar situations.
What would happen?
Yeah.
What could happen? I'm thinking fault, I'm thinking earthquake.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But what happens with a well and a fault?
Well, I don't think these faults have moved in a long, long time. So it's unlikely that they will move again. Of course, you never know. But they're there, and because they're there, they've crushed up the rock, and that's why the wells that pierce them get so much water. But those faults then act as like highways, super highways for groundwater. The groundwater flows much faster in those faults, and if there is a PFAS source somewhere that's intersecting one of those faults, then it's going to go throughout the fault. So anyone who has one of those high production wells is more likely to have PFAS than someone as a poor producing well.
Do we know how many Lawrence Township homes have their own private well?
I'm sure the health department knows that. It's mostly North Lawrence, but I'm sure they could tell you the number of how many.
It's a grid. You could even look it up, but for privacy reasons, I don't even know if the health department.
I'm pretty sure they have a record of every well.
And some of them are unknown because they were wells, but they never got reported.
Also, when you buy and sell properties, you can know that your water source.
It's interesting, though. He said that the levels that they found these wells are actually pretty low. I think he said they were under 10 parts per million. So even under the current regulations.
Yeah, actually,
so they really didn't find, I guess, well, it would be an alarming rate that we should
that we need to
react.
Yeah.
But it's still a good question. I think we should maybe ask our health officer, you know, if he's seen any results or, you know, what they've done in terms of looking at that issue.
I dare say there could be other issues in the water.
Yeah.
It's
Right, probably more serious than PFAS in some ways. Yeah,
that could be.
Well, the water companies have to do quarterly reports on what the regulated contaminants. So, and it goes directly to the homeowners, and it's also online, so you can always see. But there's emerging contaminants that, you know, you don't know about, but they're not regulated yet. And our bedrock has a lot of arsenic in it, so sometimes that's an issue too.
Yeah, there could be arsenic, there could be radon, high levels
of
iron, manganese, and other stuff that's typically in the water that homeowners have to deal with.
Yeah.
But for many years, haven't we tested for radon?
I think that happens for every sale. Every home sale, there's a radon test.
That's not water, though. That's air. Airborne.
There's PFAS in the air, too, so.
Yeah.
When you said McDonald's wrappers, I'm like, oh, energy.
Yeah. Because of the film they put on
pizza boxes.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Pizza
like
boxes.
Everything.
Yeah.
Can you
have
furniture?
Everything is ruined. Plastic.
<They killed>.
50 years ago, plastic was an issue. We were loving it. Our tumbler.
Yeah.
I'm
sure.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sure my age.
In terms of public, I just, you know, just as folks think about public education, I just want to highlight Trenton Water Works is testing, but not, they have a lot of other issues that they need to contend with, but it's just another water servicer that I don't think is up to date on the PFAS treatment.
Yeah. Now, I understand they don't have a PFAS problem, because their water comes out of Delaware. And
I did read that.
That's what I was told. They don't have a
PFAS
problem.
In Delaware? Yeah. I can't believe that.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, I think that the PFAS they're hitting is groundwater contamination, really Delaware is more surface. Yeah. Surface water is runoff, so it's a little bit different.
Delaware would be nice.
That would be a plus.
I'm going to
take that.
Yeah. You've got to give them something, right?
They got to
have something.
I'm ready with that one. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. And the DEP regulates PFAS. New Jersey was one of the first to regulate it, but then EPA changed, but we'll see where that goes, too. Mm. But, yeah, they're under.
Okay.
As was the Green Avenue one. They're being proactive.
Yeah. That was a beautiful.
Okay.
All right. So master plan update. Yes. The master plan had been on hold a bit for really two reasons. One was, quite honestly, and I think I talked about at the last, an earlier meeting, I had to get through the affordable housing deadlines. It was just a time necessity. I'm sorry, the whole state is under a crunch and our firm was included. So there was that. The other reason why things had not progressed was in part because we started seeing, right before the housing plan was adopted, in about the month or so leading up, we started seeing new developers coming out of woodwork with major sites, like ETS is obviously the biggest site for discussion. And so the thinking is that it's really disrupting what would have been master plan policies if the master plan had been adopted prior to this housing work, thinking, for example, about a new comprehensive master plan with ETS coming forward perhaps a year later. So it gives us, pausing to see who came forward knowing that ETS was one of them and looking to see who else might come forward. And at this point, we're almost at the point of closing the opportunity for objections. So our housing plan was submitted at the end of June 30th-ish. We now have a two-month objection period, which ends at the end of August, which is an opportunity for developers to come forward with new sites. So as ETS and 3641, for example, Lawrenceville Road came forward saying that they have newly available properties that the township must consider as part of its housing plan, whether or not we must incorporate them into our housing plan and give new zoning. Those are two different issues, but we must at least consider it. I think there's a possibility that we're going to get additional objections between now and end of August. And I say that not because of, unless there's something I've missed in the township, but I get a lot of phone calls from developers and from my other clients who are starting to get additional developers to that are reaching out, seeking new sites, and just submitting objections, saying that the housing plan is flawed and they can fix it, of course, with development on their property. And so ultimately, I think what this means is once we get through August, we'll be able to confirm the world of sites that are within play. And admittedly, I have to say, a developer could come forward in September or November or consistently, but the time period that the state intends for developers to set their intentions, state that they have land for development so that the town can potentially incorporate them into the housing plan, that comes to a close on August 31st of this year. And I think that's helpful for us certainly to have an endpoint, but it's also relevant for the master plan because it means that we're going to be able to set this up and say, okay, we heard input, we heard comments from the public that needs to be incorporated into the master plan. We also now know that we have hopefully just a handful of sites that we set forth in the housing plan that also need to be incorporated into the master plan. And so while the delay is unfortunate, what I do think is that it's going to give us the opportunity to adopt a housing plan that is as current as possible and accounts for what I'm hoping is going to be the only major site that's in play, and that is ETS. Because what I see is that property is just, it's a significant change to the township, it's a significant part of our housing plan, and I think it needs to be a significant discussion point in the master plan in terms of how we're going to treat it from a housing and job, recreation, circulation perspective, et cetera. So now that we're on the verge of finishing this period, what I see is finally now an opportunity to move things forward, pick up where we left off, which is this is what we've heard. We'll also be able to incorporate these are the things that have happened since we heard from the public, which is largely the housing plan, but additional things we can incorporate in as well, and then bring these ideas back to the public for review, for update, and then ultimately, once we've got input on from the public in terms of what we've already heard and how that can be incorporated into the master plan, like the policy recommendations that may flow from public input that's occurred thus far, that'll get brought to the public, they'll have an opportunity to provide additional comments, and then we'll be at the point where the master plan can be fully drafted and brought to the planning board for review and for discussion.
All within time frame.
Yeah, so what I'm anticipating is I'll be able to bring all of the comments and changes back to the master plan subcommittee in late August, early fall, early September, and then we'll be able to bring additional public comments shortly thereafter, once the subcommittee has had a chance to review, and we'll set up additional public meetings, and then we'll, after that point, we'll be able to draft it. I'm still planning for this year for an adoption.
Oh.
In your experience, what have you seen that's been different about the housing plan and all of the activity that has occurred this year in your professional experience?
It has been, I was going to say it's unprecedented. I would say since 2015 and 16, it's unprecedented. Because what the distinction, or the similarities rather, between 2025 and 2015-ish is, and it's sort of the official opening of municipal housing policy and planning. So in 2025, it started in many places in late 2024. Developers started coming to municipalities. And so what you're seeing is developers knowing that municipalities need to make a decision, they have housing obligations that need to be satisfied, that gets accomplished through development. They hope it's their development. And so they're picking up contracts for sale of land. And so they're coming to the municipality as part of a single wave, essentially, as they're all trying to by and get into housing plans that needed to be adopted by June 30th. The normal course of action is developers pick up land as properties naturally get sold, and you might have one or two a year of significant projects moving forward, as opposed to what's happening in 2025 and what had happened in 2015, which was an immediate opening of municipal decision making on housing and just this onslaught or this wave of developers who are picking up contracts and then essentially vying to have their site in the plan. And so there's a time deadline from their perspective and for municipalities as well. And so for them, I think it creates the opportunity for faster decision making.
So would you characterize it as a more aggressive?
1,000%. Yeah. Okay. Having a developer purchase a contract for a property and seek to put themselves in your plan is by nature aggressive and very often adversary. It doesn't need to be, but as a developer picks up a site municipalities don't love, it immediately becomes
litigious.
Yeah.
Next, do we see it slowing down? I mean, because how long could it be sustained at this level?
I do think it's going to naturally slow down because the deadline for developers, like the official deadline to have an official process for participating in the plan is coming to an end in less than 30 days at this point. Mm-hmm. And so for a developer that, let's say, picks up a property and wants to do a development in 2026, there's always an avenue through affordable housing, but they have to, unless the municipality just immediately wants to work with the developer and rezone the site, maybe we think it's a great idea too, but assuming that's not the case, they then need to go through the court process. It costs much more time, it costs much more money on their part, as opposed to the way the state, the Fair Housing Act intends it, is the state has sort of rolled out the red carpet for developers at this point, in the sense that, okay, municipalities have adopted their plans now. You have 2 months to tell us what's wrong with those plans, if there's something wrong, and how your site, assuming, because that's the developer's intention, how their site can solve the problem. In 2026, 2027, et cetera, it's a much less certain process, and they're subject to however the court may want to handle it, as opposed to 2 month objection period, 4 month mediation period, and then there's a decision period. So you have a very efficient and expeditious process laid out for the second half of 2025 versus any other year. It's really at the whim of the court and the court schedule.
Mm-hmm. Judges,
mm-hmm.
These are particular judges, right, that are already appointed.
So right now we have in the Affordable Housing Dispute Resolution Program, which is the judicial replacement of the Council on Affordable Housing. I mean, they're very different, but they're fundamentally, they do the same thing. They review and approve housing plans. We have a seven or maybe six member judge group that is running the process, and they have a few dozen municipalities that are assigned to them. They have a special adjudicator that they work with in each of those municipalities. And that's the framework that they're working in, where they have an administrator at the court process and the courts that are helping these six or seven judges and the special adjudicators. And so it's essentially a team approach and a very organized approach versus you file paperwork in 2026, 2027 to try to disrupt the municipality's housing plan to create space for yourself, essentially. And at that point, you're waiting, you have to file a motion, you're waiting for the judge to find the time to put you on the schedule and then go through mediation, which potentially could take much longer than what's intended to be this very expedited process. So I wish I could give you much more certainty, but the problem, the challenge that we're all facing is that we have a new Fair Housing Act. And so everything I'm sharing is a prediction, as opposed to, you know, in the third round, I can tell you exactly what happened and what would have likely occurred absent this new Fair Housing Act. Here, I mean, I know that we have a much more efficient and organized and structured process, but I don't think anybody in the state can tell you definitively exactly how it's going to go. They can tell you that objection period will be over by end of August, mediation will be over by December 31st, but exactly what's going to happen between then is a little up in the air. But from a developer's perspective, this is the opportunity to make a change in the most expeditious fashion.
Dare I ask the question? So, if there is a new administration, could all of this change?
In theory, but...
would have to go through legislation.
Yeah, it would have to go through legislation. And the last time the Fair Housing Act had a more significant amendment was 2008. And it took until 2024 to get a very sorely updated version of it. I mean, it's possible. But it's very possible. But it took a lot of work to get to where we are. I wonder to what extent a new administration is going to have the appetite or the votes to do a significant change to how this act works.
Thank you, and thank you for all of your
work. Any questions? You want to
ask some questions? Yeah, come on up. Sylvia Cobos, 1547 Park Avenue. I just would like one clarification. So I heard you mention that we're postponing the master plan process to include ETS property in it. If you could explain a little bit more why we're doing that. I have no objections about the EDS developed. That has nothing to do with it. I just, overall, why would we do that for a development?
It gives us the opportunity. It's going to be a significant change in terms of land use and impacts, okay. And it gives us the opportunity to have to do some more comprehensive thought in the master plan when we're considering everything else in town. So, for example, if is an overly simplistic and not real example, if there were a land use that the township were looking forward to creating, whether it was a recreation or a housing land use or something that might be accommodated on ETS, it makes sense to consider that as part of the master plan, as opposed to potentially planning for that use elsewhere in the community, only to find out 4 months later that ETS is in play and that might actually be a better location. So it gives us the opportunity to think comprehensively about the township from north to south and including this very significant parcel.
So it's just to so I understand correctly. So it's just to accommodate what we would put in, maybe that accommodate wrong, to make it to for the part of the housing of the master plan that would be already kind of figured out with the ETS. We wouldn't have to do any amendments later on to the master plan with the housing part of it.
I'm not sure if I got the question or if this will answer, but it's an effort to avoid adopting the master plan now or previously before ETS came forward or we had an opportunity to fully think about it, only to then have to amend it later to account for whatever may be planned up there.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Yep.
But it's just so the objection period's over and
absolutely.
That. So just till the end of August.
Yeah, I think it's an advantage that we can incorporate ETS, but it's also about maybe something else comes forward that we need to incorporate as well.
Oh, okay. Hopefully not.
Hopefully not.
Rumbling.
Oh, I hope we're done. I agree.
Yeah. You never know. They're chomping at the bit. Like.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So
okay. Good.
Good.
Okay. All right. So can we have a motion to adjourn?
Motion.
Second. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.